The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
All right, we are here. It is Friday morning. Gil is off for one more day. You are stuck with me for the final day. It's been a great week filling in here on the show. I'm Jared Smith. This is one of my favorite shows to fill in for. Not just because of the timing, but also just the fact that it's the morning. I love the morning. To me, it's kind of when that's when all the stars align. It's when you get your ducks in a row for the day. We got Wyatt Tomchek here with us as well. Crack producer doing a great job this week as well.
I do not love the mornings.
Why don't you like the mornings?
I'm not a morning person. I'm a night owl.
Born and
raised here in Vegas, so it's like, you know, we live in the night.
But the sun, like, for those that are unaware, when you wake up early in Vegas and you catch the sunrise, it's the prettiest sunrise, I think, in the country that I've seen. I haven't seen every sunrise in every state, but the desert and just how hot it gets during the day. But in the morning, like when I go walk the dog, when I do this show, I walk my dog around 5:30. It's still relatively dark. And usually it's 110 degrees most days. It's like 85, and it's like the perfect temperature. I don't know. There's something about the morning that just gets me all.
Well, yeah, it's the only time that it's cool. But
it's the only time that it's cool.
To answer your question about the sunrise, yeah, it's great if it's not blinding me while I'm trying to drive into work.
Yeah, you got to be cool with that. All right, speaking of blinding, we thought we had an opener last night in the NFL, a preseason opener that got derailed by weather, not the sun, but the lack of sun because of rain. Apologies and thoughts and prayers to anyone who had an over ticket like me last night. You basically won at halftime, and you didn't get rewarded for your win because most sports books have the 55-minute rule, which states the game has to go 55 minutes before they can cash totals. I think it's totals only. I think sides, certain books will cash early, but totals for sure they won't. So I got voided on my over last night. If you got paid on it, great, good for you. Most likely most of you were voided. Or as we say in the Marvel world, sent to the void, right? After the Deadpool, you saw Deadpool last night, you enjoyed it?
Yes, so I saw none of the Hall of Fame game. I was waiting patiently to watch Deadpool Wolverine, which I recommend. Great movie.
Yeah,
Don't take your kids to it, but for the adults, it was a great movie.
Yeah, don't take your kids unless they like blood and violence and cursing and all things that are R-rated. I did dabble in the first half, and then I went out for dinner, and I was when I went out at halftime, I'm like, oh, we're good. Money in the bank, baby. And then, of course, I pull up my phone after dinner, and I'm like, how come there's no more money in my account? How come there's not money in my account than when it was? The rain happens. Don't be mad. Let's leave it at this. There is a story today that you can be upset with at the sportsbooks. Don't be mad about the sportsbooks for getting voided last night. If it states it in the house rules that the game has to be played 55 minutes and the NFL doesn't have the foresight enough to know that the rain's coming and start the game an hour early so they can get the full thing in, they clearly didn't care about playing the full 60 yesterday. And I'm assuming both coaches were probably happy to kind of move on with their lives and their schedules, as this is an extra game on the preseason calendar for both of them. So we move onward from that. But there is a big story circulating the sports gambling world this morning. It actually started yesterday, and it was reaffirmed this morning. But DraftKings is taking a very unique approach to dealing with what's been a headwind for the industry over the last few years, which is a ridiculously high tax rate in some of the biggest grossing states, the biggest culprit being New York, with their absurd behemoth albatross of a 51% tax rate. Well, yesterday a story kind of got leaked or kind of got put out there in the sphere that DraftKings was going to try to offset some of those taxes by taxing winning bets in those high tax states, Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, I believe Illinois also on the list, Vermont, another one of those states with a ridiculously high tax rate. Well, obviously that was met with a lot of upset people. Twitter X was up in arms yesterday, including me. I think it's an atrocious way to kind of pass through what has been a very expensive venture for a lot of these sports books, which is operate in states with really high tax rates. I think there's a certain level of New York where the operators just have to admit defeat. You are not going to be profitable if there's a high tax rate. It's really hard. And obviously we've now had 2 years of New York's market online, and the results have been I would say, timid because of the ridiculously high tax rate. Well, what DraftKings is going to do is they are going to charge bettors 3 to 5% on each winning bet. So what does that mean? Well, you make a bet. When you look at your ticket after the bet is made, you see what you risked and what your payout will be. Well, you'll still see that, but on the bottom line, kind of like a bill, when you get a hotel bill and you see like the service fee or the convenience fee or the bed fee, whatever ridiculous fees they put on the hotel bills these days, you'll just see a line item on your ticket that says service charge or whatever tax, and it'll be 3 to 5% deducted from your winning ticket. So let's say you make a $100 bet at even odds, 100 to win 100. It'll say 100 to win 97.50, 3.5% off of it, or 2.5% off of it. 3% would be 97. So that's kind of where we're at this morning. DraftKings CEO Jason Robbins, this is from Ryan Butler, does great work covering the industry for Covers, tweeted that the CEO Jason Robbins reaffirmed the strategy behind the winning bet tax on today's earning call, that the product, this is where he lost me. The product is so good that bettors will be willing to pay the 3 to 5%.
That's, when you hear that, you just kind of like, it's just like, you know, these big higher ups are making a ton of money. Just like, come on, dude. Like, I feel like you're out of touch with the common people here. It's like, for me personally, Jared, I only bet, I mean, I bet for fun, like $20.
But now you're only going to win 18.
Yeah, it's like, really, I'm getting taxed on that?
Yes.
For a $40 win?
Not you, because you're in Nevada. But if you lived in New Jersey or New York, you would.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And most people are like you. Hmm. Most people that bet on these sports books, the bigger box shops especially, I would say 95 to 98% of the people who bet are like Wyatt. $20, $50 on a Sunday, watching some games. It's not a significant amount of money, but for him to say that the product is so good, the product, for me, the product is only as good as the price. To me, price and product are the same thing. If your product is so good, it's a tough pill. And one of many reasons I'm glad I don't live in New York anymore, it's a tough pill to swallow for the average Joe. That's where I think this is going to become. And to be fair to DraftKings, it might not be the only shop that does this. Right now, they are. We haven't heard from FanDuel yet. We might. August is their earnings call in a couple weeks. MGM Caesars, my guess is they won't, because they have the land-based casino operations that FanDuel and DraftKings don't. I would be willing to bet that MGM and Caesars does not do this. But this is a big, I would call it, checkpoint to the sports betting experiment in America. It started in 2019. Basically, it was the Wild West. States were popping up. New Jersey technically went online at the middle part of 2018, basically right when PASPA was repealed. Credit to Chris Christie and his team. They were ready to go with that legislation right away in 2018. Then, obviously, the market kind of evolved a little bit. The first year was the Wild West, literally the Wild West. Then COVID hit, and I think COVID, frankly, was an accelerant to the sports betting industry. But once New York got activated, that was a massive day because it was one of the biggest states in our union, biggest city, number one market, finally opening its doors to this. And I remember when that story broke, the entire question revolving what was going to happen was all around the tax rate. How much were these books going to be charged for operating in a state as premium as New York? And when we heard 51%, we're like, oh man, that is not a sustainable business model. I don't know how these books are going to make money. Well, 2 years later, they haven't. And now they are passing that through to you, the average Joe bettor. You're going to have to now, and this is going to start in January, you will have to pay this tax this football season, January 1st, 25. Good luck being profitable. It's already hard enough to make money in this racket over the long haul. And let's be honest, you're watching this show, you're involved in this space, you're not betting for a weekend and then going away. Like, this is your lifestyle. This is what you do every day. Every day, this tax will continue to accumulate and add up. it will be met with one of the stiff arms in the history of you know, the public persona. People are not going to like this, and I don't know if it's going to make them change it, but people are not. There's not going to be one positive about this that I think from our sphere. I just don't see it being a positive thing at all.
Yeah, anytime you are taxing the common folk, it's kind of like the argument about taxing for to build stadiums or renovating stadiums. I know the big thing in Vegas was the hotel tax. At least it wasn't for locals. It was for visitors coming in. But anytime you are just adding those little charges, it adds up and starts to peeve people off.
It all adds up. And that's the juice is already punitive enough most days. I think the hardest thing for an average bettor to overcome is the juice, because everybody likes to live in the prop market and the Nerfy market, and those are expensive markets. They're derivative markets, a lot of them. So you're already paying a higher premium just to make the normal bets you want to make. Most people don't bet minus 110 sides and totals. Most people, the average Joe bettor, likes to bet props. Props are already 15-cent splits. Well, now it's going to be 18-cent splits because you're paying a 3% tax on every single bet. Big story this morning. You're going to continue to see this story evolve. And, oh, boy, when the calendar turns to 25 and people start getting these surcharges, right? Surge pricing, we call it when you're doing the Uber. It is not going to be a very popular situation for these books. But we'll see. Again, gambling continues to evolve here in this country, and this was another step in that direction yesterday. Tyler Shoemaker, always evolving, coming up next here on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, hey, check it out. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Why? Because the College Football Betting Guide out now. Ultimate guide, ultimate resource for the upcoming season, including previews for every team, all 134 of them. A preseason top 25, power ratings, proven systems, and more. Sign up now. Receive both the College Football and NFL Betting Guide, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks 24/7 video, exclusive data like our splits all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount price of just $175. Or sign up for a monthly subscription. Get your first 30 days for only $19. See everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Don't miss out on these preseason deals. Sign up VSiN.com/subscribe. All right, onward we go here on A Numbers Game. It is Friday morning. I am Jared, also Wyatt is here with us. And now joining us via the Progressive Guest Line, he is Tyler Shoemaker, VSiN writer and creator of the T-Shoe Index. Always great to catch up with Tyler. Of course, you can follow him on X at T-Shoe Index. All right, Tyler, let's get down to business here. College Football Betting Guide out now. You've got a plethora of picks and predictions throughout. We'll get to Conference USA in a minute. I think that's kind of top of mind. But we had another one of your brethren on yesterday, Zachary Cohen. We were talking about the Missouri Tigers, and it seems like Missouri is kind of becoming this hot-button team in the SEC. We've seen a lot of love for the over. You are one of those people that like the over on Missouri. Zachary came on yesterday and believes the under is actually the better play. So I will give you the floor, sir. Wax poetic about the Missouri Tigers. Why is that over 9.5 wins one of your best bets here for the college football season?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly have seen some resistance. A lot of people going to bet the under on Missouri, anticipating some regression on the defensive side of the ball, which I certainly understand, and I did account for in my numbers. I'm still pretty comfortably on the over, though. I mean, I've got them number 6 in the country in my power ratings. I mean, I'm projecting them right at 10 wins. And the other thing, obviously, I mean, the most important thing when you're considering any bet, the price is the ultimate deciding point. And the price, when you can get plus, you know, 130 or better on that over, that really puts me on there and makes it a best bet for me.
Yeah, so my initial gut was over on Missouri. And then everyone started to pile on that bandwagon. I'm like, okay, am I missing something here? Because it seems like it's a consensus overplay. And Zachary did make some really good points yesterday about the defensive coordinator, Blake Baker, of course, now at LSU. So I am a little bit, I would say, hesitant to like shove all my chips into the middle, but I don't think I'm really excited about an under here because I do like the schedule and I do think they're going to start fast. And when I think a team's going to start fast, right, Tyler, if I think they're going to bank 4 wins, probably 5 wins in their first 6 games, I feel a little bit more confident coming off of Missouri later in the year, if that is the case. So I'm with you. I think over is the only way to bet it pre-flop, especially if you get a good plus money price. All right, let's go to Conference USA. You did a great job breaking down this conference in the College Football Betting Guide. The team at the top of the heap is Liberty. They were fantastic last year, did not lose a conference game. It looks like their schedule is relatively favorable again this year, but the win total is sky high. So what can you tell me about Liberty this year with a 10.5 win total and, again, a conference that they're odds on to win it before the season even starts?
Yeah, you're so kind saying that, you know, the schedule's not great. I think that's a very nice way to put it. I think Bill Connolly with SP Plus, I think pretty much everyone that has any type of predictive model has their schedule, you know, in the bottom three in the country, if not dead last, which is where I have them. I mean, their toughest game at Appalachian State, I still have them as a 2-point favorite in that game. So, you know, they potentially drop that. The interesting thing, though, you know, I project them right at 10 wins. I think everyone's going to be on this over just for the simple fact, like we said, their schedule is very, very bad. So I would not want to necessarily bet an under, even though my numbers indicate that's the mathematics side. I just, even if they lose at App State, I don't know that anyone in Conference USA is up to par to be able to beat Liberty this year.
Yeah, so the thing about Liberty that just makes them so tough is they play such a unique offense, and it's a conference that just doesn't have the athletes that can run with them. Like, they are so much stronger and bigger, faster. Western Kentucky and Jacksonville State are the other two teams that have high win totals in the conference this year. Jacksonville State's very intriguing. I believe Rich Rod's still the coach there. As they make their transition into FBS over the last couple of seasons. Is there anything in the middle tier that intrigues you? I mean, I know some of the teams at the bottom. I mean, some of the, you know, the UTEPs and the – I was on the UTEP over last year. I thought they were actually in a decent position to go bowling. I was totally wrong on that. But, you know, you got some really bad teams in this conference, which sometimes actually, you know, it's easier to handicap the teams that are going to be bad than the ones that are going to be good. But with that middle tier there, right, the Jacksonville States, the Louisiana Techs, the Western Kentuckys, the teams fighting for bowl eligibility, anything intrigue you there in the middle part?
Yeah, I mean, I think from an edge standpoint, Middle Tennessee over 5 at -115 is my biggest edge for my projections in Conference USA. So I would consider that. I project them at 5.4 wins. So that's a pretty solid bet there. I mean, their strength of schedule, I mean, obviously everyone in Conference USA strength of schedule is terrible because they all play each other. But Middle Tennessee, I mean, a -7.5 average opponent power rating. Wow. So I mean, they're playing a team. On average, that's a touchdown below FBS average. So, you know, very soft schedule. I like Middle Tennessee to go over.
Is Kennesaw, is it their first year in this conference? Were they in the conference last year, or is this one of the transitions for them?
This is their transition year. They're coming up from FCS. And they, you know, Jacksonville State last year, I don't think anyone really knew how to project them coming up from FCS. They had a great season. I don't think Kennesaw State is that. I've got them near the bottom of Conference USA, actually at the bottom, even below FIU. So I think it's going to be a rough transition year for them. I don't think they're going to have near the success that like a Jacksonville State had last year.
It's funny because when I was down working in Boca Raton at FAU, it was always FAU, FIU were kind of battling for that South Florida supremacy. One of those programs has ascended FAU to greater heights, where FIU, it seems like, over the last few years has continued to sink. Great stuff with Conference USA. All right, the College Football Playoff is going to be different this year, right? Expanded field. It changes the way that we view the odds. I do think there is some meat on the bone with some of these teams to make the College Football Playoff at plus money. You've got your Final Four set already. Do you want to go through it one by one? Ohio State at the top, is that your number one team? Or is it Georgia, Oregon, Texas being your four? How would you rank those, would you say, right now at this stage?
Yeah, so I do have Ohio State number one by just a half a point. So, I mean, you know, I wouldn't argue you if you wanted to put Georgia at number one. I think it's basically a pick 'em with those two. And I think those two are the clear top two within Oregon and Texas. You know, I do think Oregon is maybe just a little bit above where Texas is. You know, I had to kind of really give some benefit of the doubt and projection forward on Texas, whereas Oregon's numbers were very easy to come to a high power rating on them. You know, the interesting thing, though, like you mentioned with the 12-team playoff, you know, Ohio State and Oregon are now in the same conference. Georgia and Texas are now in the same conference. So only two of those four are going to be able to get a first round bye, which is going to make the playoff even more intriguing, I think.
Yeah, Tyler, have you struggled at all with the numbers this year? You know, you've been doing this for a while now. Obviously, when fields expand, I think college football and college basketball are the two toughest sports to rate just because of all the moving parts. And, of course, you do both of those exceptionally, so you probably have a lot of sleepless nights. But was it extra difficult this year because of the expanded field to try to wrap your arms around all these teams and try to – or is it just that, hey, college football changes all the time, my variables change, that's why we make manual adjustments with ratings?
So it was difficult. I wouldn't say because of the playoff expansion, because that's not something I'm factoring in as I'm rating the teams. But certainly when you take a step back, look at the big picture of what the season might look like, that certainly impacts my analysis of it. But in terms of the ratings, it was difficult just because, I mean, we with the transfer portal era, I mean, we just see so much movement and roster turnover year to year. You have to kind of sift through the noise and say, okay, this team's trending one way, but what did they do this offseason? Did they lose everyone? Did they bring in a huge portal class? You know, like an Ole Miss, Ohio State even brought in a couple of transfers, which isn't typical for them. So, you know, trying to adjust for those type of things is probably the hardest part of it.
Yeah, I rely on very smart people like you to help me with the ratings. I think where I'm at with the overall landscape of college football is just be comfortable being uncomfortable. Like, you just have to accept the fact that all of the prior – you know, mental gymnastics that you would play when you're going through the season, like, you just have to be willing to change. And there's a lot of people out there that have been doing this for a very long time that are not willing to change. And I think those are the handicappers that are going to have the most struggles. All right, so if you had to pick a national champion today, you were going with Ohio State. I know my producer Wyatt's probably going to be really upset about that. He actually might want to chime in and give you some hate there. But are the Buckeyes the top choice heading into the season for you?
I think so. I mean, their non-conference schedule is atrocious. So, you know, they should easily start off 3-0 with an average margin of victory of about 50. their conference schedule actually, you know, they go to Oregon. Obviously, they got Michigan at home that they have to win. But I do think, I mean, if Ryan Day is ever going to get it done, I think it has to be this year with the team, with the guys they brought back. I think it has to be this year. I did wear my Scarlet and Gray today Wyatt. I can't wear the Scarlet and Gray and not pick Ohio State to win the national championship.
All right,
I thought
Wyatt,
we were friends,
the
Tyler.
Floor, friend.
Thought we were friends. It hurts.
I love the draw. See, when these situations happen, the host just kind of sits back and lets the producer and guests just kind of battle it out, because I'm clean here. Penn State, we're going to finish third in this conference no matter what, although we might finish ahead of Michigan this year for the first time in Lord knows how long. Tyler Shoemaker, great stuff, pal. Love catching up with you.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Jared. See you.
We'll have more numbers game on the other side. I hope Penn State – it's ironic that I'm wearing actually Penn State blue today. You're wearing black. Maybe you're mourning the loss of Michigan season already early. All right, Wyatt, we'll come back on the other side. I'll let you rebuke the Ohio State love.
The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Top of the hour, final hour, last hour, best hour here on a numbers game. Jared in for Gil. One last hour of the week. Gil will be back next week. Kelly will not be. Wyatt, you got a long road to hoe here, pal.
Yes. When I went on a 2-week vacation, I came back. I had a week of a numbers game, and then I had 3 weeks of sharp money. I got about maybe a week and a half off of producing, and now back in the saddle.
Do you sleep at all, or is that optional?
Here's the problem: is there was a great game that came out maybe a couple weeks ago that I'm just really interested in, and that's college football. And
you're wasting all your time doing that.
No, it's a lot of fun. But playing on Heisman, Jared, I think if you were playing defensive line, you'd be able to sack me about six times because the offensive line play is just so bad. But
I just can't get involved with this game. I don't have time.
Love it.
Like, I barely have time to do my own chores and do my own life. And now you want me to buy a $500 gaming console, sit down for hours. I mean, hours. And I'm not knocking the people who have the time. I just don't know where you have the time. As an adult, I don't understand how you have more than an hour in the day to do anything.
This is why I'm pounding Red Bulls every morning.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Wyatt's not a morning person because he's up till 4 a.m. Actually, that's when you probably have to wake up for this show. Maybe you're up till 2 a.m. playing college football. What's your team in college football?
Right now, I am the head coach at Indiana.
Are you enjoying your time in Bloomington?
Well, I can beat the bad teams, like Minnesota and all those. But trying to beat the Ohio States, Michigans, the Iowas. Actually, I did beat Iowa. But
congratulations.
Oregon and whatnot, I got smoked.
All right, speaking of those teams in the Big Ten, let's make a transition from the NFL to college. Let's talk about Wyatt's favorite conference. And I guess it's my favorite conference, although I don't really play favorites anymore. Whatever conference makes me the most money, is my favorite conference. Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, currently at the top of the win total leaderboard. I don't think there's any surprises there. I think the biggest surprise, maybe it's not a surprise if you consider the personnel switch, but I haven't seen Michigan with a single-digit win total in quite some time. When was the last time you can recall them having a single-digit win total?
Ooh, would it be about 2021, the year after Harbaugh, and then went 2-4, and he had to take the pay cut?
It's possible, but I feel like even that year they had a 10.
That'd be the only one, and then after that you're probably going like, you know, the Brady Hoke Rich Rod.
Yeah, because this is a solid, like that probably was like 9.5. This is a solid 8.75. Right? It's a 9 juice to the under. So they are the clear-cut second tier in this conference this year, which, again, I think if you've been watching Michigan football for the last few years, that might come as a surprise. But let's be honest, Michigan is going through one of the biggest upheavals of any team has ever gone through. I mean, when was the last time a team had a national championship season and then had to replace basically every major position, in quarterback, head coach, right? Like, it's a lot to fill.
I would say not head coach. That one will take it out, but maybe LSU when they had
Burrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Orgeron was there the next year.
Yeah, because, the next year was COVID. I can't remember.
Which is kind of an asterisk.
Somebody opted out that was, I don't know if it was,
was
I think it was
Chase Higgins?
That opted out.
It was Chase.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a certain element to Michigan that I don't want to run to fade them, but I'll be honest, I'll let you kind of give me the handicap on Orgy, right? You know, that's the key. If he's a star, I could see them winning 10 games this year. What do you think?
Really, the big thing we know about Alex Orgy is Michigan used him in the running game. So when he has the athleticism to scramble out, he hasn't really had a lot of passing attempts. So that's going to be the big question mark for him. And, you know, just losing so many offensive talents like a Blake Corum, Cornelius Johnson, Roman Wilson. I think the big thing to have back is a Donovan Edwards. I think we'll have hopefully a bounce back year, really struggled minus the national championship game. And then you've got really, I would say the safety blanket of the offense is Colson Loveland. The one thing I will say, Jared, that helps Michigan out is what happens when a head coach leaves? It is a madhouse in the transfer portal. The good thing that Michigan did was, and the smart thing, was that they hired Sharon Moore. They promoted Sharon Moore to be the head coach.
Continuity.
Yeah. There wasn't that many people that entered the portal. In fact, Michigan had one guy enter the portal,
come back
to Ole Miss, play spring ball, and then come back to Michigan, which I've never seen before. So I think that was the key, is that they didn't get wiped out in the transfer portal.
I think the defense is going to be really good again.
Martindale leading the way. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I think the thing about Michigan, and listen, the schedule is tough, right? The non-conference, Texas, is tough. That's a tough game. I know it's at home, but it's still, I would say, a national title contender, even though you might argue how really, you know, what their chops might be. But they were a team last year that obviously competed at a high level, and now they're in the SEC, and they're going to want to get a win under their belt before they have to go play that SEC schedule. Mm-hmm. And then you get home games against Fresno and Arkansas State. So I think 3-0 is very much a possibility. And then you face USC at home, Minnesota. You go to Washington, who's got a ton of, you know, issues on their own, right? They lost their head coach, OC, everybody, quarterback. Then you get the bye, then at Illinois, Michigan State, and then you host Oregon, at Indiana, bye, Northwestern, at Ohio State. I'll be honest, I see one game where they're a dog, at Ohio State.
Oh, not the Oregon game? I would say
at home, I'd say it's closer to a pick 'em probably, but yeah, they might be a slight dog, but it's not going to be like they're 4, 5, 6 point underdog at home to anybody. Unless Oregon is just this high flying machine. And you do kind of sandwich that game around Michigan State and a road trip to Indiana, which is not a look-ahead spot in any capacity. But maybe the Michigan State game takes its toll and you come in flat against Oregon. But again, at the Big House, that's Oregon's – I'm assuming it's their first ever trip to the Big House, if not the first trip in many years.
It'll be their first trip since 2007, and
so
I know
long
that
time.
it was the week after the Appalachian State game.
Oh, that's right.
And Michigan got killed that game.
That's right.
It was a rough start to the year.
That's right. Wasn't that the Chip Kelly Oregon team?
Ooh, 07? I don't know if it was Chip Kelly. Let me double check on that one.
But regardless, it's Oregon's first trip to the Big House, A, as a member of the Big Ten, B, in the last two decades where it really matters. Any personnel is the same.
He was the OC.
He was the OC.
I'm drawing a blank on who the head coach was. I think it starts with a B. It's like Mike Bellotti, I think is his name.
Mike Bellotti makes sense. Yeah, that name sounds familiar. I think I'm a little higher on Michigan than most. I think I would bet the over on their 9. I think the Texas game is kind of the decider. If they win that game, I don't know what the odds are. I'm assuming the odds are up now for that Texas game. I would bet Texas is maybe a slight favorite, but I wouldn't be shocked if it was a pick 'em. To me, that's the game. If you beat Texas week 2 at home, I think you get to 10 wins.
Texas,
I really do.
Texas right now on DraftKings, -3.5-point favorite.
That's okay. So that's the game. That's the game right there. And again, 3.5, it's a significant spread. Obviously, anything more north than a field goal, but it's not 13.5. Mm-hmm. I think obviously there's going to be a lot of love for Michigan in that game, especially as a home dog. I mean, how often is Michigan a home dog? I mean, that just doesn't happen very often, not any time in recent memory. So there's certainly, unless it's Ohio State, there's certainly some upside, I think, with Michigan's schedule and with their win total. Because, again, you could drop the game against Texas. You could drop the game at Ohio State. You could still go 10-2, and you could still go over this win total.
In order probably for, still make the college football playoff. We don't
that number's
know,
probably north of 2-1.
Yeah, you don't know how many losses is really going to take a team out of the playoff.
I think in the Big Ten, it's 3. I think in the SEC, you can still get in with 3. I think the Big Ten is going to be hard-pressed to get a team with 3 losses in, unless it's an unprecedented situation where you have multiple teams with 3 losses, right? And it's like you got to have to pick one of them as an at-large. But I would not be shocked if a team with 3 losses got in either the Big Ten or the SEC. The SEC, I think we will see a team with 3 losses get in. I do. I think the one thing I've noticed over the last few years with college football with the transfer portal is just a lot more balanced. A lot more teams in the mid-tier that are competing with the higher tier, and the higher tier teams are struggling to keep some of these players because they're not playing, and they're going to teams where they are going to play. And there's a lot of changes in college football, and when you see significant moves, Michigan is still Michigan. They still have an elite home field advantage, and they still have a very talented roster. And you are getting a discount on the Wolverines this year, more so than we've gotten in this recent run. And that game against Texas is going to decide. If they beat Texas week 2, they are going over their win total.
I would say also another thing, Jared, to just keep an eye out for, Michigan is replacing almost everybody on the offensive line. I think there's one guy
that's big
that does have starting experience. So that's going to be a big question mark. That's why I said yesterday the August 31st game against Fresno State is just going to be so key that they just kind of build the momentum and find out the right system and you know what worked and what didn't. And if Alex Orji is going to be the future for Michigan.
I feel really good about Penn State winning 9 or 10 games this year. They're not going to win 11. They're definitely not going to win 12. There are bets to make in these markets where you can bet on Penn State to win exactly 9 games. That's a bet I would consider making. Same thing with 10. Like I think, you know, if you guys want to pull up Penn State's schedule, they are very consistent with beating the teams that they should beat and losing to the teams that they should lose to. That is the one thing about Penn State that has been highly consistent over the years. They beat everyone else on their schedule outside of Michigan and Ohio State. It just seems to be what they do every year. And I don't think it's going to be any different this year. I think they go in. I think they beat USC on the road. I think they probably lose to Ohio State at home, even though that game could be tighter than we expect. But to me, 10 wins seems very likely. I think you can get Penn State exactly at 10 wins at like 3-1.
And I think the key now with these win totals is, and with these super conferences, what is your non-conference looking like?
Well, Penn State's pretty simple, to be perfectly honest.
Say,
with you. West Virginia. I know that game, West Virginia, is tough, but they should beat West Virginia.
And, you know, should just stomp Bowling Green.
They're like a two-touchdown favorite in that game.
So right then and there, you've got 3-0. Where are you going to find, hopefully, maybe 8 more wins for Penn State? Or you're saying
they're going to be big favorites in every single game. Every single game on that schedule, minus the game against Ohio State and at USC, they are going to be at least a 3-point favorite. I mean, there's really no way around it. The rest of the Big Ten, I don't think, is very good this year, and they only play the 2 top teams. They only play Ohio State and even USC, who I think is going to take a step back without their situation at quarterback. So, I think, honestly, I think 10 wins is very much in the real spectrum, and you can bet that at 3-1. I might dabble with some exact wins this year for some of these Big Ten teams because I do think the margin's pretty thin. All right, we'll come back on the other side, talk a little bit more football here on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Wow. You guys didn't see that, but Wyatt just cued me too early.
Whoa. I heard a go, and I was like, okay,
no.
Go.
You have one job, Wyatt. One job.
You know what you have one job is tell us what is on the VSiN.com.
How about you do the read? You do the read.
I don't have the thing up. You have it
up. You're
talking
the screen
getting
right
paid
now.
To do it.
I'm just kidding. Check out VSiN.com right now. Best bets, betting splits. I'm not even looking at the website right now. I'm just reading off the screen. Best bets, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, betting guides. No, there are a lot of significantly actionable elements on the website today. Lou Finicaro is chiming in. UFC predictions. Fight night in Abu Dhabi. Excited about that. Of course, college football, NFL, all times of fun stuff. We got a DM here from the Bear, Chris Felique, who's watching the show. Shout out, Bear. Love you, pal. He said, we're making a mistake overlooking the Royals in the American League wildcard chase. And I agree with you, Bear. The Royals have been fantastic lately. I do think Bobby Witt is a legit MVP candidate. And I'm not saying that just because, you know, he's, a $5 underdog in a market where Aaron Judge has basically been the predominant favorite for, the better part of the last 3 months. But Bobby Witt's war numbers are right there with Judge. And the Royals have this really feisty element to them where I think their pitching is not quite where it needs to be at the top. Lugo's been great. The analytics don't love him, but he's been really good regardless. Waka's been fantastic, and Reagan's obviously is a Cy Young ace kind of caliber pitcher. So Reagan's has kind of taken a step back recently, but big start tonight against the Tigers, and that's where we start our baseball outlook here for tonight. Reagan-Skubal, really good pitching matchup tonight in Detroit. The Nerfy is basically a given, right? Yeah. I wouldn't lay it at this price. I'm seeing some shops in town here -170 on the Nerfy. So usually my cutoff for the Nerfy is like -140. I just don't get me wrong. If there's any pitcher in baseball, two pitchers in baseball, that should be able to get through a Nerfy unscathed, it's Reagan's and Skubal. But I'll just give you this right here. The implied odds of a -1, let's go -150, because I do see some -150s out there in the market. So let's go -150. Well, that's telling you 60% implied odds on a Nerfy, right? Well, Detroit's actually been an above-average lineup this year. The Royals, of course, I would call them average in terms of their scoring rate, but I would say Pasquantino and Witt in that 2-3 hole are very much above average. And especially last night, I think Pasquantino hit two home runs, and Witt's been great all year. I would not be running to the window to bet this Nerfy tonight. The last time I bet a Tariq Skubal Nerfy, Cal Raleigh hit a home run that hasn't landed yet. So I would be hesitant on this Tigers Nerfy here. And not because I don't trust Skubal and Reagan, just because I think the price is kind of keeping me off of it. But I appreciate Bear chiming in. I agree, Chris. I do think the Royals have a chance if they can get high quality from those three guys at the top. Like if Reagan's, Waka, and Lugo can pitch to the best in the playoffs, they have a chance in a three-game wild card series against the Yankees or an Orioles or whoever, you know, doesn't win the American League East. I'll leave it at this. If it is, like, let's say the Orioles win the division, and it's Yankees-Royals in a wild card best of three. Whew. The Yankees would probably get home field because they'd have more wins. But I'll tell you what, Garrett Cole Reagans, I'd say that's kind of a wash. And then you go down the line with the rest of those Yankee starters, Marcus Stroman against Michael Waka and Nestor Cortez against Seth Lugo. Again, I don't know how the rotation will shake out, but it'll be somewhere in that capacity. I wouldn't be running to the window to lay anything with the Yankees in that series, that's for sure.
How much does, like, home field advantage
factor in,
in playoffs?
Last licks.
Okay.
So I think certain teams, the home field matters more. I think Philly's got the best home field that I've seen in recent years. which is why it was such a surprise that they lost both Game 6 and 7 at home in the NLCS last year to the D-backs. I might be wrong about that. I forget if it was both. It might have just been one game at home. I forget how many games at home they lost in that NLCS, but I remember it was a clinching game. I think Philly has a really good home field advantage. So I have a really unique perspective on the Yankees home field because I grew up in New York. I went to the games when they were played at Yankee Stadium, the original Yankee Stadium. I remember the last game I went to at the old Yankee Stadium. I want to say it was 2000. I want to say it was the 03 ALCS game 7 where the Yankees lost to the Red Sox. Damon hit two home runs. I didn't live in New York at the time. I was at Penn State at the time, obviously.
But that was your last game at Yankee?
Well, the last actual game was 2008, I think.
Okay.
The last actual game. I didn't go to a whole lot of Yankees games in that time that I was in college.
That's a heck of a last game to
when
go to.
When was the when I think the I think that was the no, it wasn't the 03 ALCS. It wasn't because they went to the World Series in 03. I think it was the 04 ALCS. Yeah, it was the next year. It was the 04 ALCS. It was October of 2004. I was a freshman at Penn State. And I remember my cousin called me the morning of the game. My cousin had Yankee season tickets at the time. And he's like, hey, I got an extra ticket for game 7 tonight. And they had just lost game 6 the night prior. I remember it was dregs of the kegs morale for Yankees fans that day after blowing the 3-0 lead. And I got in my car in State College. I drove to the game. And they got their asses kicked. And I remember having to drive back. It was not a fun drive back. I remember I had a Spanish midterm the next day that I got a B on, actually. Pretty impressive stuff to get a B on a Spanish midterm the day, the night before having to drive back from Yankee Stadium all the way back to State College. But that was, I think, the last time I was in the Bronx until they closed it, which was 09. Right? The 09 season was the first season in the new stadium that year they won the World Series.
What are your thoughts? I mean, going off topic here, just nostalgia stadiums. Do you think that it was the right call to make a new stadium, or do you think they should have renovated the...
Well, that's my point. The Yankee Stadium had a massive home field advantage. That place used to shake. It used to be you couldn't keep your wits about you when that place was going off the rails. The new stadium, for all its polish and pomp, is very sterile. These wide, you know, mezzanines and these, you know, legend seats and everyone's eating the shrimp cocktail underneath. It doesn't have the same New York City angst that the old stadium had. So home field advantage is what it is. I downgrade the Yankees home field at the new stadium compared to the old stadium. I think Philly's got the best home field advantage right now in baseball. I do. I think the Rockies have a very unique one, obviously, but not for fan reasons, for altitude reasons. But they're not going to be in the playoffs anyways.
Answer your question, the Diamondbacks did win Game 6 and 7, both at...
So how good is the Philly home field advantage?
Citizens Bank Park, right?
Yeah, how good is the Philly home field advantage? Couldn't defend it Game 6, 7 in the NLCS.
Well, I'm an Atlanta Braves fan, and we've lost all four games there in the past 2 years for the NLDS. So, yeah, it's a little tough.
I think there is a certain vibe to the Yankees this year that makes me not excited about them in the playoffs. I do not think the Yankees are going to make the World Series this year. You heard it here first. All right, tonight's card, again, I wouldn't bet the Nerfy in Kansas City, Detroit. Is it probably going to hit? Yeah. Is it a good bet? No. The game that intrigues me, there's two games that actually intrigue me on the Nerfy board today. The first one's in the Pacific Northwest. I always like interleague Nerfies because you have a team in Philly that I would be willing to bet that there's not many players on the Philly roster that have played a game in Seattle, maybe with the exception of, you know, the veteran-type guys. But any of the young players, you know, how often does Philly go to Seattle? Probably never. And you get a really good pitching matchup tonight. You get Brian Wu, who has been just, when he's on the mound, when he's healthy, he's been lights out. A young kid from the Oakland area. He's been a really good young pitcher for Seattle. He's only made 11 starts this year, but he's 9-2 to the Nerfy. And then on the other side, you get Tyler Phillips, who is a very young pitcher, just making his fourth start in the bigs. He's 3-0 to the Nerfy so far. His stuff looks great. I believe he's coming off a shutout performance in his last start. But for the exercise here, we're just concerned with the first inning. Neither of these lineups have been great lately. Obviously, Philly has elite power, but I am concerned about Schwarber leading off the game with a home run. But outside of that, I feel good about Brian Wu's chances of getting through the top of the first on skates because he's never pitched against this Phillies lineup before. In fact, if I scroll down to the matchups, he has never faced anyone on the team in his entire career. That's always advantage pitcher. Obviously, Tyler Phillips, just making his fourth start, has not faced anyone in the Seattle lineup either. So you get two pitchers that are young with great stuff that have never seen the opposing lineup in a ballpark that's a pitcher's ballpark, a ballpark that Philly never travels to and likely will have to get used to some sight lines throughout the weekend. So I think the Nerfy in Seattle makes a lot of sense tonight. I think the Nerfy in Pittsburgh is also a direction I would point you in. Brandon Fatt, Luis Ortiz tonight. Ortiz making his fifth start. He's 4-0 to the Nerfy this year. Brandon Fatt's been up. He's been down. He's been great, though, in the Nerfy market. 39 career starts for Brandon Fatt. 30 Nerfies in his life. Good stuff there. So Arizona, Pittsburgh, Nerfy, Philadelphia, Seattle, Nerfy. That's where I would point you in the Nerfy market tonight. Great stuff all around. Wyatt Tomchek, our producer, Tyler Shoemaker, Jeff Erickson. Fantastic show by everyone in the back. I'm Jared Smith. VSiN continues on the other side.